The WWJD bracelet is taking me back, by the way.
Dude, shit. My daughter asked me if I wanted that because I think she got it from youth group. And, you know, she's like really progressive Christian. And I was like, Rosa, I used to make fun of these when I was your age. I was too cool for them. I was like, what the hell?
I like how your kid made you not cool anymore.
Well, now I see it as like vintage. It's like cool now.
Yeah, it's cool now. I have to get one now, actually.
Hi, boys.
Yo.
What's up?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, yeah, quite well.
I see you've been talking for 3.5 minutes.
Yep, right. About you the whole time.
We showed each other our wieners.
It's been very kind and gracious. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
How are you?
Not good.
What's wrong?
Oh, just depression is at its worst, and I'm trying to get a second opinion about ADHD, and nobody will give it to me for under $3,000, and I'm just stuck in a trap, and I cry every day probably 2 or 3 times a day, and I don't want to be a mom. I don't like my life, and I have nothing to look forward to.
Damn, okay. All right.
When you're depressed, is this something that helps you, or is this something that you force yourself to do because you know it's good for you? Because when I'm depressed,
you
I would not want to do this.
Podcasting?
Yeah, like getting together and talking on air, basically.
Well, you have to remember that I don't get to be around adults at all.
Right.
Or yeah. talk about anything I'm going through. And I'm an extrovert. I want to tell people everything I'm going through, and I never get the chance. So it's actually really helpful for me. Yeah. Even if it's just to let people know where I'm at, it's just sort of like, yep, things are bad. I'm in what I call the pit.
Pit of despair is what I call it.
I wish I could do something. That's the frustrating thing is I really can't do anything. Why aren't you the type of person that would like text me and Matt or me and Hane or just me just saying, oh, I feel so depressed.
Dude, I'm not doing well. What are you going to do about it?
But see, for me, there's something about sharing that's helpful.
Well, I do have a few of my good girlfriends are also moms and get that, like, it's something that a lot of men and fathers even don't get. It's this really, really dark hole of housekeeping and motherhood and all this bullshit.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole purity culture thing on top of it. It's like we all got into this because we thought it was like the right thing to do. And it was supposed to be such a blessing. But now we're like low key, just like housekeepers when we never get to clock out. It's just it's terrible. And I wouldn't wish it really on anyone.
You're saying if it wasn't for purity culture, you probably would have gone after a career and just taken a different approach to life?
Well, that and also an ADHD diagnosis would have helped, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people feel that way that came out of purity culture. They feel trapped.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it all the f-ing time because I grew up the same exact way. I got married early, except I didn't want kids. And I was very careful about not having kids. But
thank God you didn't.
Right. What is
that? What the hell's that supposed to mean, Alan? You don't think Matt can be a good father? Good Lord.
I don't want
to
be a father.
Well, no, with a divorce and...
That's true.
It's just a mess. Yeah. It's just a mess.
That was a much easier process.
Yeah.
Because, I'm so glad. I kept a niece for like 6 months, and that was enough kids for me for all of my life.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sacrificial thing. Like, we talked about, like, when you get married, you sacrifice certain things and you become, like, you almost, like, die to yourself. Or maybe that's Mars Hill language, but...
No, I definitely think the church sets you up to be very codependent on one another and not
and
take responsibility
kids,
for your own mental health.
This is important for me to say, just so I feel validated, but I haven't slept through the night, like gone to bed at night and then woke up in the morning in 6 years.
Wow.
God.
And
God.
It is so bad, you guys. I'm not living my life. I'm surviving my life. I think about how sweet things will be when I'm old. I'm not even 40 yet, and things are real bad and real sad.
Yeah. I will say this, Ellen, and I can say this from experience. The stage of parenting that you're in
is true. It's true.
it is just too much for anyone. Like I remember the best advice that someone's ever given me was Chip Judd when we were in the weeds at the same stage as you, and, you know, four kids. And he's like, dude, all we knew how to do was just to get to the next day. It's like, there's no other advice but surviving.
I have not been taking care of myself at all. And I've just been like, it's just really bad and gross. And I want health insurance so bad so I can go get diagnosed.
You don't have health insurance?
We were poor enough last year to get state health insurance, which is awesome. We don't have to pay for it this year, which is a really, really huge blessing. But also, you can't pay for mental health services really at all unless you're willing to wait 3 months at a time and then la la la.
I have really good health insurance through Obamacare. Is that what you're on?
You got it on the marketplace, though, where you're paying separately.
It's like Cole free, though.
Oh, because you don't make very much.
Make more, it was still free. And like the most I've ever paid for it was like $23 a month. It's fantastic insurance, too.
If you don't make enough, then awesome. Free almost everything except for mental health stuff. But if you make more than $1 over the certain amount, then you are too rich for it. And you have to pay, like Cole and I have to pay $800 a month just for the two of us to have health insurance, which is too much. I mean, then if we pay for that, then we're way too poor to even, it just doesn't make sense. It's a loophole and I hate it.
And that's
I wish
the way
there were like a stages.
Set up.
Yeah.
Kind of created to fail.
Which is why we should all have free health care.
Daphne. What's up?
Thank you for waiting.
All good. I was thinking about before getting into this episode, I changed my mind and I want the whole episode to be about whether or not women should be able to speak at church ever, just for any reason.
No, I think never. I mean, they wrote the female apostles out of the canon for a reason.
Right.
At the Council of Nicaea. Who cares that Jesus appeared to women first and appointed them as apostles? Like, yeah, who cares about what he did?
Did you guys read the article about the woman who did her thesis on the two different Marys?
Oh, boy.
Mm-mm.
Oh, shit. I have to send this to you guys. I'm not really into this stuff, but this woman who was doing her thesis went it was like the first time that all of the original scriptures were digitized. And she was looking at the original scriptures and she was doing this whole thesis on Mary of Magdalene.
I'm obsessed with Mary Magdalene.
Okay, well, then you will really enjoy this. And I'm going to botch it, so I'm not going to explain it too much. But the point is, they found that some of the pronouns had been changed. And they realized that the Mary who was with her sister Martha is a different person. Okay, I have to send it to you. It freaking blew my mind. They discovered that Magdalene was not even a town on the map at that time. So it wasn't where she was from. It was a title that was given to her by Jesus, which meant tower. She was Mary the Tower, which was like a really, really important thing. I almost gagged. I was so excited. I'm going to keep talking.
I mean, can you even imagine, like, maybe Jesus wanted women leaders from the get-go? So, Stephanie, what I would love to do is I was telling these guys how much I like you, and I know so little about you. What's your interaction with evangelicalism and your voice and all of that? I don't think you're too interconnected. And I would love to hear how you got to where you're at now. I'm pretty sure the four of us, by the way, Matt, Stephanie, Matt, you were already talking to Ellen. Matt, you can speak for yourself, but I'll just go ahead and say, has deconstructed all the way out. Why are you hanging out with a bunch of Christians? And why is this so interesting to you? It's like, we can never shake this. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's all you want to talk about. You still see the world through that.
I think I've told you before, I have the curse that's all I can really think about. There's always some part of my attention going to the idea of God, and has been since I was like 13, and I can't turn it off. So I just engage with it in the healthiest way I know how. And I guess that's with you right now. So,
and you're more gospel than a lot of Christians. So
I'm a hardcore gospel lover. I do love the gospel. I just think we get it wrong. So
Stephanie, how were you brought up?
I was brought up in Baptist and non-denominational churches in the South from Arkansas. My parents are with the Navigators. Have you heard of that ministry?
Uh-huh.
They met at a Navigator thing. in the 70s. It's where they got, you know, got married immediately, had me immediately, that sort of thing. And have always, were always with the Navigators all while my, I was growing up, but just hardcore church, you know, evangelical flavored. We lived and breathed it. And I really feel like I was, I grew up in a cult now that I'm looking back at it. And I always had deconstruction-y questions. Like at church, I'd be like, why is the pastor bragging about his new Cadillac he got? And I'd want to put it in the offering plate when they would like put the comment card. My parents were like, no, don't do that. You know, so I always had that. I would always ask questions, but I also was kind of down with the idea of God. And I saw just a lot of stuff, you know, I grew up in an abusive home. I was raised by abuse survivors, you know, who found Jesus through the Jesus movement, didn't have resources or therapy or maybe inclination to look into how to heal, you know, it was 70s. I'm 47. I'm old. So I remember just from a young age, having a strong sense that God being real and telling me, they're not doing this the way I want it to be done. Like, this isn't love, but this is love that they, this is what love looks like to them, but it's not real. Like, I just remember from just a, like one of my earliest memories is has that sort of presence in the background. So I think that really helped me.
Dang. So as a child, yeah. You were hearing from God in that regard.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I feel like it. I know. I feel very hashtag blessed for that because I do think it saved my life. Like I was diagnosed with depression when I was 13. And I know now is because I didn't want to live because I was in this really restrictive environment that wasn't loving. I don't think I really grew up in a Christian home because there wasn't forgiveness and love. And there was always the threat of being cut off. And that's very standard to me now that I know looking back at just how it works. That's yeah. How the church works. It's fundamentalism. It needs to be black and white and everyone falls in line and just smiles, you know.
When did you go from that environment to screw that? I'm out of this. Like, I don't want anything to do with this.
I never did. I never fully. Well, I mean,
well, I mean the environment that you were in. I'm not saying mm-hmm. God. I'm saying that sort of upbringing, the fundamentalism. When was the wrestling done? And you're like, I'm not having anything to do with that.
No, it was never done. It was constant. I just remember hating going to church, and I was thinking today about Vacation Bible School and what torture that was. Did y'all hate Vacation Bible School too? I said today, like, I would rather go to VBS than do something, you know, at work or something like that. But I don't ever remember liking church. Now I like to go, but I like to go when it's empty.
Feels like we're having small group because I got a lump in my throat while you were talking. Honestly, because something that you know, depression, we all have that in common. Abuse, I know Matt has that in common. I know that there's some people and they just can't even really process this. But one thing that puzzles me is how are we not more soft-hearted to these fundamentalists, knowing how jacked up the environment that they're in, knowing that they've been spoon-fed this, knowing the pain it's caused us, and they're still in that shit. Sometimes I'm like, I get the anger. And again, if people that were abused by the church and all, I get there's some people that just cannot process that. But for someone like me who, yes, the church screwed me up, but there wasn't any sort of abuse or scandal. There is a pastor that I know. And in my opinion, he's struggling with whether or not his adult kids are going to go to hell. And they're just wanting a father. Like they just want a normal relationship with their dad. We don't have to talk about any of this stuff. We're fine. And my heart goes out to both of them. Like a father who's imagining their kids burning in hell forever and ever, and then kids that just want to be able to talk to their dad about work, you know, go fishing or something like that. It just seems like there's a lot of anger, and I kind of get it.
The anger is born of love. Like that's beautiful. It should be there. It'd be very unhealthy to not be angry about that because your anger shows you where your boundaries have been crossed and where there's something bad happening. It's a warning bell. It's also often a protective measure because it is easier to feel angry than it is to feel sad or vulnerable or lonely. And, you know, it's easy to stay there forever. It's easy to be angry your whole life. And so you don't have to dip down into grief.
And also for the pastor, the reason that he's so focused on being concerned about his kids going to hell is because that's what he's been taught his whole life.
Right.
So he also was
in hell.
Experiencing,
everyone's in hell already.
Experiencing life and fruitful love because he's so focused on the fear.
It sounds as if you still hold faith in high regard. I'm still connected to an evangelical church. They are aware of my beliefs, and we've figured out how to make everything work. I mean, more free than ever. I feel like I enjoy following Jesus more than ever. Like I never enjoyed it because it was always something that if I didn't do, I was going to pay the price. And if my faith wasn't strong enough, I was going to pay the price. I'm curious where you're at in your faith and your beliefs and any sort of major shifts like that.
Yeah. My husband and I are going to a Vineyard church. We've been there for a few years, and that was very weird to start going there because I grew up so evangelical and Baptist that tongues and anything like that, like spirit tinged, anything a tiny bit charismatic freaked me out. And it still does a little bit, I have to say, but this is a Vineyard church that, has two women pastors, and they are open and affirming. And I know that the Vineyard denomination is not as a whole, but they're a breakaway, and they're just very community service oriented. And I really love it. I really love it there. And we do that on Sundays, most Sundays. But during the week, I like to go to Mass as often as I can. Before the pandemic, I was going every day before work. And I love it. I love it. It's like getting in a hot tub. It's my favorite.
Stephanie, are you in Seattle?
Yeah.
Are you talking about St. Mark's?
St. James. Yeah, St. Mark's is the big Episcopal one. It's right by my work. And I was really drawn to St. James about 15 years ago when I started going to therapy. I work at a hospital, and as I was like reading about these cases, I would start crying, and that had never happened to me before. And my therapist said, "Well, your shell is coming off." I'm like, "I need to find a way to deal with this, so I can still do my job and not be this mess, you know." But I just was really overcome with grief for these people. Like something was coming, like scales were falling from before my eyes or something. And so I started on my lunch break going to this Catholic church. And I felt a little bit like naughty because I grew up being told like the Catholics worship Mary and saints and you know, you can, my parents would like rather me be atheist than Catholic.
Same.
So I felt like, but I was so drawn to it. And I like felt kind of like, ooh, this is kind of fun. I'm being bad. I'm going to the Catholic church. But I was honestly like pulled to it like a tractor beam. I felt like so much peace there. And I started like noticing the statues, the images of Mary. And I would just ask her, "Can you be a mother to these people?" And that was my earliest experience in the Catholic Church. And I just love going back.
You get a kick out of this. So I was Catholic up until the third grade, came from a Catholic family. Well, my dad was even a Eucharistic minister. I mean, we were heavily Catholic. And there was a priest that came. He was a guest priest. He came for one Mass, pretty much straight up said, "If you're not a Catholic, heaven is not for you," sort of thing. And so, I mean, my dad is pretty resolute. It takes him a while to get to a certain place, but we came home and he was like, "That's the last Mass we will ever attend." Well, my grandparents had just had a conversion and they were going to a Pentecostal church. So we were visiting that church a little bit before we left the Catholic church. And so I was like a 4-year-old and the priest would raise his voice a little bit and I'd go, "Hallelujah, amen." And like the nuns would turn around like, "What in the world is going on right now?"
Wow.
Oh, man. My brother is Orthodox, and they actually pray to saints, which I was...
Oh, yeah. Cute, though. Yeah. How adorable. How adorable for
so
a little boy.
That's great.
So, intercession. You were about to say something about intercession.
Oh, I believe in the intercession of saints. That's not a problem for me. And I actually believe in transubstantiation, which you're probably not supposed to believe if you're not a baptized Catholic. But I do. And I'll tell you the reason I do.
That is the one thing that I can't get over with Catholicism. Otherwise, I would be all in.
I'll tell you why I believe in it. I mean, whenever I'm at Mass and the priest holds up the host, and that's the moment when they teach that the spirit comes down in you know, into the actual elements, start crying. It's just very overwhelming. So it's spiritual and emotional, but it's not anything in my head at all. I'm with you on that. I can't explain it. And I don't expect anyone to believe it. So
Matt, you know, we talk about this stuff a lot. I know you well enough to know that you're with three people that you like, respect, you're having fun listening to. is there a part of you that's just like, damn it, I wish I could believe a little bit? This
He's baiting you, my dude.
Yeah, he is. I haven't had communion in a very, very long time, and the idea behind that is really beautiful. And it's not anything I've been able to experience kind of since I stopped believing. So I'm very jealous of that. That's okay. Stephanie, we know a lot of the same people. I looked you up, and I thought you looked really familiar, and I think we've interacted on Facebook before. So, but we know a lot of the same people, so I may send you a friend request.
Awesome.
One time that I went to a mass, I was refused communion because I was not Catholic, made me feel really frustrated.
That makes me so angry, and it's one reason I won't become a baptized Catholic, because they refuse it. They refuse Eucharist to people. They don't let women be priests. And they don't affirm gay people. Horribly abusive. It's horribly against Jesus's teachings. And I don't believe that Jesus is down with that at all.
No.
It's never going to happen in our lifetime or in the next, probably.
I think the historical beauty of the Catholic Church cannot be, like, equaled. And I think that's why so many people are drawn to it. But the fact that they're just so unwilling and unwavering. And I actually love the Pope. This Pope is the best Pope we've ever had. But the fact that someone could be, you know, molesting kids and denying
thank you. Exactly. Like, who the fuck do they think they are? Yeah, it's very exclusionary. And I will take the Eucharist if they don't know that I'm not a baptized Catholic.
I do too much daggum generalizing, but it seems like a lot of people that believe strongly about some of the things that we like, let's just pick on the gay people. Like, all of us being affirming, that is a big deal to us. Most people would be like, I ain't going to no mass. Are you kidding me? They don't affirm gay people. How do you process that? You're pissed at the very people doing the mass that you love.
Yeah. Well, and I'm pissed because I love them and I think they're very wrong. I'm there for me. I'm there to meet God. I also know that God is everywhere. So I don't need to go to church, but there's something about it I love if I have the energy for it. I'm so tired on Sundays. I'm exhausted from church every Sunday all my life. Like, that's exhausting. We need a break. That's so mean that they make us do that. Like, how are we supposed to observe the Sabbath? Like, it's like throwing a big log in the mechanics of your Sabbath to have to go to church. It's the worst, you know, but I love seeing the people. So I'm just listening more and more to, do I feel like going this place today? Like,
have you been through a season, Stephanie, where you just didn't go to church for a long time?
I guess I'm in one right now. We haven't been this summer and we miss it and we want to go, but it's just like, we're tired. It's hot.
I just came out of that similarly, and we just started going to Redemption Church in Green Lake. It's an Seventh-day Adventist church. They use it on Saturday. We use it on Sunday, but it's so beautiful, and there's no like lights, and there's no show, and it's so sweet, and the community is so sweet, and I'm just like, ugh, feels good to finally.
I'm so glad for you.
I know.
Oh, that's great. That's so great.
I still don't want to go.
I know. It's like, and Zoom
that doesn't matter.
Yeah. I love them. It's just effort. You know, if I didn't work, maybe.
Yeah. And I have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. So.
So Stephanie, tell us a little bit about the snub by Christianity Today, the work that you were doing. I actually am not super familiar with Fake Driscoll. I think it was actually, didn't they shut it down?
He took it down. Like, I remember it was around the election. It got finally taken down, like, without
Stephanie,
cause.
You were my hero.
Oh, thank you. Well, I started that in like 2008 or 2009, because I was in group therapy sessions with women who were going to Mars Hill, and I didn't know too much about the church. I had been to one church service in like 2006 or something. We were going to Presbyterian, like PCA church at the time, and everyone, horrible, patriarchal, disgusting marketing bullshit going on.
Everybody there, that I know that went to that church has left.
So painful. No one can harm you like the church can, like in those instances, because it's like your family. I had an instinct about Mark Driscoll that I didn't have about my pastor, which I should have picked up. But anyway, when I first went to Mars Hill, I'm like, what is going on? This guy is a dick. I can't believe he just said that from the pulpit. You know, he said, like, it was in the Ballard location, and Mark Driscoll like riffed for 90 minutes and bragged about wine and knowing wine, and everyone's just hanging on to every word. But the thing that really bothered me was that he said that the husband should, or the wife should, agree to have sex with the lights on if that's what the husband wanted. And I'm going, I had had enough therapy at that point to know how many women and men in the audience had been sexually abused, and like how, you know, you're absolutely re-traumatizing a ton of people, like setting it up for that by saying that. So that's as much as I knew about Mars Hill. Then I started.
That's all you needed to know.
That's all I needed to know. And then a few years later, I was in group therapy and these women were coming in shaking, like trembling. And they go, I'm not supposed to be here. I go to Mars Hill. I signed a covenant that I would never get counseling from an outside source. But I just want to kill myself. I had a job and I loved it. And then I got married and the church said that I needed to quit my job and have a bunch of babies. Now I have these babies and I'm so depressed, having just like really severe mental health stuff across the board.
Mark is talking about how you should not be on antidepressants because it's just part of the trendy Seattle culture.
Yep. When they went to the pastors at Mars Hill, they would say, they would tell them, you need to submit harder to your husband and pray more.
Mm-hmm. Lean in.
Yeah. And so it was just really obvious to me that, like, what better way to destroy a family than to attack the mental health of a parent in this way?
Before you came on, Ellen, it seemed like you were making a similar connection. When you say purity culture, you learned that from Mars Hill, correct? And you were kind of connecting your current depression and your view of your current life setup, attributing that to how you were brought up with purity culture.
A little bit. Like, Mars Hill was my adulthood, really. I went there from my early 20s to my mid 30s. There's the purity culture that comes with being at an adolescent and a teenager and learning like sex before marriage, all that kind of stuff. And then there is the like wife grooming type of purity culture, which is what Mars Hill really was for me. What I was saying, Stephanie, before you got in here, one of the reasons I'm not doing well now was because I am a mom of two little kids, and I shouldn't say this very loud because they can hear me.
Go ahead. No, please do.
But I...
I'm like, we could take it. People need to hear
your story. Stephanie's like, your kids need to hear it.
No. Girl, I'll tell you anything, but I don't want them to know this because this will be like a world of hurt. But I hate it. I hate it so much. And I hate every day, every moment, every hour of it. And I always just felt like it was my duty. Here I am, like super creative, super outgoing, like really talented. I am in a hole of despair because this is what I chose for myself. And I chose to be a mom, and not to say that my husband is like, he's working so I can't work. It's just like, that's how things work themselves out. He can make more money than me right now. So I've been stuck for 6 years just in this despair like spiral. And it is all because I was fed this idea that once you have a great marriage, you want to build a legacy. The legacy word was used so much at Mars Hill. And this idea that you want to just like build this sort of like empire of like leadership, and you're going to...
I can't think of a more prideful concept than worrying about your legacy. Like, I can't think of anything more self-centered.
No, but I never thought about it like that. I thought for sure, like, you want to build a legacy for your kids and have wonderful teaching and save some money for them and like have great grandchildren. But I didn't know that I was being groomed to make more kids for the church. And so now I have kids who I love with all my heart, which is the f***ed up part, but I can't get out now. It's the worst thing I've ever done. Okay. Yeah. Maybe
I'll give you my number if you need to talk or we can meet up or something, but I get it.
Yeah. And also, like, again, like I said, like, I'm trying to get diagnosed with ADHD so I can get some help. And I'm not functioning. I am making sure that they don't have poop on their buttholes and they have food in their mouths. And that's it. That's literally it. And I'm trying to make sure nobody kidnaps them. That's also it.
You're doing great.
Thank you. You are.
You're doing amazing, Ellen.
Yep.
I would have killed him by now for sure. So you're doing way better than I ever would.
I know.
It's How hard. Old are yours, it's Stephanie? Hard.
They're 17 and 20 now.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. I know, right? Well, there's a whole different set of shit coming up for me. I'm so glad I've been in therapy this whole time because
yeah. I just want to not be yelled at every day and my clothes being pulled at. Like, I don't want to physically. I don't want to physically touch my children for a little while.
I know. No, I'm like, please snuggle with me, and they're like, oh. So that's where we are.
How? So we don't get an opportunity to talk to you, obviously, as much as we all talk to each other. So go into it as much or as little as you want. But how does depression play into your life now, if it does?
Like, a good friend of mine, she's been through all this as well, and she was saying the other day to me that she's like, I'm going to stop calling it I was sick when I was sick or when I had my breakdown. She's like, that's when everything broke open for me. And I was able to see that it was just everything, every cell, fiber of my being saying enough. This is not how you're supposed to live. It's just a severe wake up call. And, you know, I've been there. I haven't been hospitalized, but I could have. And I've been medicated for many years. I've been off all of my meds for maybe 5 years now, and it coincided with like making the strong boundaries with family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who were just really steeped in their fundamentalist beliefs, evangelicalism, no relationship, everything's behavior, but you don't talk about anything. And they didn't want me around because I wanted to talk about feelings.
Are you still in therapy now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I have a spiritual director as well, which is kind of an Episcopalian Catholic tradition. This woman, she's an Episcopalian Buddhist mashup. She's like a grandma. And I love her to death. She's a licensed social worker. So but she's had like spiritual experiences and, you know, everything's very Buddhist with her. I really believe, or it resonates for me at least, that I chose to incarnate in this way with this set of circumstances in order to learn certain things I wouldn't have any other way. That really resonates for me. I don't think it conflicts with Christianity, although, you know, don't tell that to my fundy relatives, but I've never felt better. I'm not medicated anymore. And I think it's just because because my depression was screaming at me, get these toxins out of your life. You're poisoning yourself, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for you, your depression was really situational, like chemical imbalance.
I do think it's chemical because it runs in my family. My great granddad committed suicide during the depression. Like there's stuff like that on both sides. And I'm really aware of that. But I also think that dysfunction runs in the family. And I'm like, no, I'm not teaching my kids this. My therapists have all said not very many people do that. Like they just would rather go with the flow and stay medicated or just, you know, wall it off. But I'm more like, I want to feel it. I want to talk about it.
We're so similar, Stephanie. We're like the same, but you have old, you have adults and I have kids. Little children.
when I was going through that when I was at my sickest, here's the biggest shocker. And now being on the other side of it, I'm still surprised. All of that crazy religious, fundamentalistic, OCD, batshit crazy stuff came back. And I'm like,
perfect sense to me.
See, it doesn't to me.
You didn't fall back into it. You were cleansing. It had to come up and get aired out.
It's called skimming the fat, Joey. When you make soup, you like everything comes to the surface and you skim the fat.
Gotcha. Y'all, I was literally sitting in the living room with my parents. They had the TV on. I'm staying with my parents because I'm in that bad of shape. Didn't want to be around my family. And I was probably getting up every 10 or 15 minutes to go into the bedroom and say some sort of sinner's prayer. And again, I'm shocked that I fell back into that, but that's, and I think what I've really been mourning a lot, and it's weird because I haven't ever been sad about this until this year. And I know for sure when I trace back to my childhood, I can put the pieces together and I can recall when my mental health started to slip. It was when we were transitioning into a Pentecostal church. I loved that church. I wanted to go to that church, but the theology was polluting me as I was drawn to it. I mean, Sundays were like my favorite. Now, part of it was because I had a big crush on a girl there, but still, I loved the whole thing. They did community pretty well. So it was like you're getting some of that good stuff, but
you just described why people are so MAGA. It's like they create a community. It's all fear-based. It's very exciting for them, but they all now have a bunch of new fears.
Yeah. I look at my son and I am seeing how I would have been had I not been polluted by all that, because he was not. He is super outgoing, good with adults, and he loves school. I didn't like school because I was afraid of kids that cussed. I didn't want to be involved with extracurricular activities. I didn't want to go out for the basketball team. I wanted every minute to either be at home or youth group because that was safe and that's where the good people were. Joey, it's really starting to make me, it really is making me sad. I really am not mad. It's just so saddening. It's just really
Joey,
sad.
You, I don't know if anybody's ever told you this before, but you deserve to have therapy when you were a kid. And none of us really got that.
Right.
You should have had therapy when you were a kid.
Here's the thing. When
it
people
wasn't
have
done
a
back then.
Yeah. Right. When people have a fundamental belief in hell, and this, I truly believe that if hell is a reality, then we need to scare. We need to mess people's minds up, whatever it takes to make them afraid not to go there. If it's real, we should.
You've already been there, bitch. It's already been. It's real because you were there.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's true.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, if you believe in this place where you're tortured mentally or physically forever and ever and ever and ever, I would do any and everything to try to keep people out, even if it seems toxic here on this earth. Anything to keep people from, you know, going there. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I don't believe that's how things pan out.
Kinda, well, that's what you're doing with this podcast. You're trying to raise awareness and community so that we can talk about this and eliminate the hell that is believing something like that.
Right.
That's hell on earth. And heaven is also on earth, you know?
Right.
You're breaking the cycle and your son is not bearing the pain that you did.
Right.
And he's free because of the work you've done. And Ellen, the same for you. Your kids are not going to go through what you went through because of your awareness and your work.
Yeah. It's true.
It's really major.
I mean, they'll have a whole slew of other things, but we can't protect them from all of those things. But I'm trying to raise little anti-racist, liberal Christian kids. Christian, if they want to be Christian.
I'm really excited about my kids because the biggest thing that I wanted them to be able to do is to be critical thinkers when it comes to the whole cancel culture. And they actually went to camp.
That's Joey's number one topic. That he cares about is cancel culture.
The church is obsessed, has been doing cancel culture for centuries.
Oh, totally.
Joey's obsessed.
But basically, I love the fact that my girls enjoy, and William, I forgot, it was his first time at camp, but they enjoyed camp. But they also had an awareness of a lot of the beliefs of evangelicalism. Now, my kids and I, we believe the same way when it's gay people and the afterlife. But they're able to go to a camp like that, get the good out of it, not demonize anybody. They just understand some people have unhealthy beliefs, but it doesn't necessarily make them bad people. Priscilla and I literally high-fived when they came back from camp and they could recognize the stuff that they're like, now we don't buy this, but it was a great experience and we want to stay involved.
And, you know, and think about alternatively, would secular, I don't know what another word for that, would secular were people send their kids to a Christian camp and be like, well, you know, not everybody, that's f-ing weird. It's really weird.
That's a good point, actually. I want to say that if you're on antidepressants, stay on them. The goal isn't really to get off them. I don't think that's the
goal.
I was able to taper after as a PSA.
Right.
Really, no shame in staying on them.
Right.
Come on, I mean, it's like, you know, everyone makes the diabetes analogy, but it's like that.
No.
Yeah. Priscilla would.
People like me and Joey are going to be on them forever.
Yeah. All right. Let's. I want everybody to answer this question, if you would be so kind, and we're going to use a little bit of imagination, and we can end this here.
Oh, I thought you were going to say magic. I was so excited.
What is worst case scenario if Donald Trump runs.
Oh, for president. Jesus, please.
So
Jesus.
we're not talking he's elected. I'm talking 2024 rolls around and we're like, holy shit, Donald Trump is running for president as the Republican candidate. With just him being the candidate, what do y'all think is the worst case scenario for our country?
I think there's one correct answer, which is civil war from all the weird MAGA right wing paramilitary people, right?
See, I mean,
that seems pretty bad.
Yeah, home invasions, you know, like them taking you out, jailing you, like that sort of thing, like fascist Europe, like that sort of thing. A Holocaust is.
Like, I could be hung, maybe because my Black Lives Matter flag on my front yard. Maybe someone will come, like, hang me. I mean, that sounds like fear-based stuff, which is kind of ironic.
Now, do y'all see that?
They all do.
I won't even let myself think about it, though. I just don't think about it. And
I think we're okay in Seattle, girlfriend. I think we're okay.
But you know what? I was in Bride Aid a couple weeks ago, though, and there was a girl in there. I tweeted all about this because I happened to be in the same part of the store as she was, and she asked the pharmacist for Plan B. And she said, the pharmacist said, well, we're busy back here. Can you ask the floor manager? And so she asked the floor manager and he said, how old are you? And I that caught my attention. I was like, you're not supposed to ask that. You know, I didn't say that, but my ears perked up and she hesitated. And she said, I'm 16. And he goes, let me check. And then he walked to the cash register and came back and goes, you're too young. I can't sell it to you. And I knew
are you the one that bought that was that not for true. Her?
Yes, that was me. Because
I just read that tweet. I didn't know that was
here. That was here in Seattle, just like 3 weeks ago.
Shit.
And I tweeted it, and people are like, "I'm glad I'm in a blue state." I'm like, "I'm in Seattle, and it can happen here. It can happen anywhere." But I, you know, talked to the headquarters of Rite Aid, and you know, and so I got it. You know, I told her, I was like, "Wait outside," and I bought it for her, and then. You know, I was like, can I give you a hug? And do you feel safe?
She's like, oh no, get out of here.
Yeah. Right. She's like, you're saving my life right now. And I just asked if she felt safe and almost gave her my phone number, but I'm trying to be better with boundaries. But
yes, yeah, I was just gonna say.
It's so terrifying because when you said we're in Seattle, we're safe. I've just like lost any kind of feeling in that way. But there's a book that has helped me so much and I'm a bit of an evangelical about it. Because I read it, I actually read it the night before Roe v. Wade was overturned. I had picked it up. I'd listened to this woman's talks for years, and I just happened to get this book from the library. But her name is Byron Katie, and the book is Loving What Is. She had a breakdown in her 40s, and she was hospitalized, horrible, horrible. Her life was just falling apart around her because she was at war in her mind with her thoughts and feelings of, you know, intrusive thoughts, basically. And something happened for her. She had an experience. And so now she helps people with these four questions where you just ask yourself, and it sounds culty. I'm like, there's four questions, like the four spiritual laws. But she's like, just take the thought that's troubling you and ask yourself, is it true? Can I, you know, can I actually know it's true? And who would I be without this thought? And is there a way I can turn this around? So I just want to say that after I read that, everyone in my family has commented that I seem to be doing better and I'm lighter and happier. And I really think it's because it's not like she is this guru who is a, you know, a saint and we need to follow only Byron Katie, but it's like it's a helpful tool to be like my negative thinking. Like I have these deeply carved neuropathways to veering towards negativity and I'm 47 and it's time to fill in those grooves and redirect them somewhere positive. And it's just helping me so much to have the tool of going, am I believing something that's even true? So that's why I'm trying not to go down the Trump rabbit hole. Just, you can totally ask that question, but this is why I don't really go there because it was driving me insane during the election last time, the 2016. Yeah,
I don't think that's coming, but I think something, I don't know that the American hegemony that we currently enjoy is going to maintain for very much longer. We're kind of seeing that decline right now. We're watching that live. But I don't think Trump is your biggest concern. Trump is a pathway to fascism. He is not the fascist himself. He's just giving fascist power. And what you're seeing now, real fascists come up in the Senate. And I think we're going to see a new party come up that's like ultra fascist. I think the Republicans that go into this new party that's forming around the Trump era, the America First Party, which I think is what they'll probably call it, that's what you should be afraid of. That's what's coming there. the Democratic Party is not going to do anything to make it better.